Many thanks for downloading the Culture Club podcast. This week I was joined by the cellist Stephen Isselis. Stephen, welcome aboard. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Now, you're going to be playing two concerts at the Wigmore Hall in London on Wednesday and Saturday with Joshua Bell and others. And it features music by Czech composers. Now, I know you've said that you feel Czech music is underrated. Why do you think that is?
There's an innocence to all these composers. There's a childlike quality. That all these composers were playing Suk and Martinů and Janáček, as well as Dvořák and Smetana. They all have that quality, that folk quality. And I think they really go directly to the heart. I think Dvořák, of course, is an incredibly popular composer, quite rightly, but perhaps people don't credit him with quite enough importance, in that I think he's really the first sort of folk composer to write symphonies and really to fuse folk music and classical music. And I mean, he was a difficult man, sort of like a dog somehow. He had a face like a dog. There's all sorts of stories of him being deeply annoying, but he's wonderful as well.
Well, you describe him as an eccentric train spotter and pigeon fancier.
Yeah, that's
And that's
true.
Something that I didn't know about.
Oh, really? Oh, no, he loved
it. He seems rather an extraordinary man. But
he was an extraordinary. Well, he was like a child. He never really grew up. He loved his card games. There's a card game he used to play that nobody really knows how it was played now.
Yes.
It's gone. And because, of course, I did a lot of reading about him when I was writing my books for children, and one chapter was about him. And he was definitely the funniest of them. They were all pretty much all of them could be very funny, but
yes.
I think he was the funniest of the 12 of whom I wrote.
And Smetana, of course, is known as the father of Czech music.
Yes, he has such a tragic life. God, I was just looking at the trio yesterday just by myself and thinking, oh, why am I playing this piece? It's so sad.
And this was written because his little
daughter
girl died
yes.
aged four, I think.
Yeah,
yes.
Awful. I mean,
yes.
And then, you know, poor man, he went deaf, he had syphilis, he went mad. Everything went wrong in his life. I would certainly never write about him for children because it's too sad a story.
Yes.
But Dvořák isn't. Dvořák's a nice, happy, basically happy story, except he was in love. Like most composers, it seems, he was in love with his sister-in-law all his life.
Oh, and unrequited and desperately unhappy.
Yes, and married her sister. Same with Haydn, same with Mozart. It's a very odd habit composers had.
And he, of course, combines the attributes of a folk musician, doesn't he, as you were saying earlier, with that of a very talented composer in classical forms.
A genius in classical forms.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And actually, let's hear him now, because this is you playing the opening movement of his cello concerto in B minor on Classic FM. The first movement of the cello concerto in B minor by Dvořák, played by my guest this afternoon, Stephen Isselis. The Mahler Chamber Orchestra was conducted by Daniel Harding. I'm Charlotte Green, and a warm welcome to the Culture Club on Classic FM. My guest this afternoon is the distinguished cellist Stephen Isselis. Stephen, if I can take you back to your childhood.
If I'm distinguished, it feels like a long time ago.
Well, you come from a very musical family.
I do.
And you certainly all used to play music together, which must have been wonderful
true.
And great
well,
fun.
Well, mixed. I remember rehearsals ended up with my father whacking my sister over the head with his bow.
Oh, dear.
It's not easy to play together as a family, but we were a very music-based, we still are a very music-based family. Well, my parents are both dead now, but my mother was a piano teacher. Mm. And my father was a violinist, amateur violinist, but very, very keen and very good. And then my sister Annette, my older sister, she's a violist as well as record producer and arranger. And my middle sister Rachel is a violinist. But actually the best musician, the most expressive musician in the family was our Dandy Dinmont Terrier, who used to join in and sing with us. Heart-rending expressivity.
Kind of musical howling, I suppose.
Oh, it was. It was beautiful. But funny, he would howl particularly to a Mozart's easy C major piano sonata. And if we change key, if we put it into B major, he'd stop and look at us in disgust.
And he was, I think that's
a
wonderful.
Very musical doggy.
And what was it about the cello that appealed to you as a young boy? Why did
you
choose the instrument?
Well, I didn't, to be fair. My parents did, because there was a local teacher who who offered to teach me free for a term for some reason. But also because, you know, my elder sister didn't yet play viola, but she was always going to. And Rachel was already playing violin. And we had violinist, my father as well, the pianist, my mother. So they needed a cello for chamber music. And that's it. So they chose what I think is scientifically proven to be the greatest instrument of all for me. I was very lucky.
And your cello is sitting here right by us as we talk. Mm. It's a Stradivarius, isn't it?
It is.
Can you tell me a bit more about
it? Well, it's not mine. It belongs to the Royal Academy of Music, but it's called the Marquis de Coubadon. It is an aristocrat, and it's an aristocratic cellist. And it's funny because many, many years ago, I heard it played by Zara Nelsova, who played it all her life, the great Canadian cellist. And she brought it down to a seminar in Cornwall, where I'm director, and she was playing it, and my sort of best friend, David Waterman, cellist in the Endelian Quartet, was sitting next to me, and he turned to me and said, "That's the cello for you." Oh. And then 20 years later, I found myself playing it.
Now, you're appearing at the Wigmore Hall, as I said earlier. I wonder what you think of the Wigmore Hall as a venue. It's very small and intimate. I love it as a member of the audience.
It's my musical home. And I played there up to 16 times in one season. I think that was a bit much. It's got warmth. It's got incredible feeling of the ghosts of the past who've been there. It's a magical place. I always call it my musical home. Even Paul McCartney loves the Wigmore Hall. Everybody loves the Wigmore Hall. And also coming on stage. In a way, it's scary because there's no hall that I know where you come on and the applause sounds louder. I mean, it sounds incredibly loud when you come on stage at the Wigmore. Sort of hits you, to come, which is scary and inspiring at the same time.
At the same time, yes. Do you ever suffer from pre-performance nerves, or are you someone who's really able to cope well with that?
I hate my general saying, and it's wonderful for all my fellow musicians I'm playing with. I go around before concerts saying, "I hate life, and life hates me." That's how I feel before I go on stage, and sometimes afterwards as well. But,
and do you have any set routine to counteract that?
Well, I've got a set routine. Big lunch. Lie down. Get up. Listen to the Beatles to get me going again after lying down, and then strong coffee before I go on stage.
And what do you listen to from the Beatles? Anything and everything?
Anything. It tends to be middle period.
Yes.
Sort of Rubber Soul or, you know, Beatles for Sale or something like that. Excellent. Revolver, maybe.
Well, look, let's hear you again, Stephen, because this time you're going to be playing the music of none other than Johann Sebastian Bach.
None other.
This is the Courant from the Cello Suite No. 1. That was the Courant from the Cello Suite No. 1 by J.S. Bach, played by my guest this afternoon, Stephen Isselis. I sometimes ask my guests whether they have a particular piece of music that resonates with them. And they often say the cello suites by Bach. What is so special about them?
They are magical. They're hard. I mean, partly it's the mystery of them. I mean, the cello is everything. It's harmony, it's rhythm, it's melody. And he manages to. And it's not like the violin partitas and sonatas, which are much more learned in a way. You get these huge fugues. He doesn't write a fugue. He writes one implied fugue for cello. But it really feels as if it's a confession straight from the heart of this divine musician. And I think, but I could be completely wrong here, but I do feel that the six suites tell the story of the Passion of Christ, and that the fifth suite particularly is the crucifixion, and the sixth suite is the resurrection. And I think that story also speaks to people. But it's also the mystery. We don't know why they were written, for whom.
Yes.
It's not entirely true that they vanished, and Casals, the great cellist Casals, completely rediscovered them. They never vanished. Even in the 19th century, Schumann was saying they're the greatest works for a solo instrument. But Casals certainly popularized them. And I do think they're more confessional in a way than Bach's. I mean, Bach is always a god. You know, it's rare you feel he's talking about himself. He is a god looking down on humanity. And but this is, as I say, it's divine music.
Yes.
And yet it's also dance music. There's nothing pompous about it at all. It's absolutely dance suites.
That's very true. I know you're very involved in younger audiences having a greater access to classical music. And I noticed that Nicola Benedetti this week said that children should be exposed to classical music just as they are to great books. That is, music should be an essential part of education. I'm sure you'd agree with that.
Of course. Almost goes without saying. She's absolutely right. But it almost goes without saying that, yeah, and as well, you don't sort of sit a child, a normal child, down with a 500-page Victorian novel. You bring little bits. And that's what, yes. I do a lot of children's concerts, actually not in England, really. I had my own series in New York, and I've just been doing a couple in Paris and Bruges, children's concerts. And you play the same as you play for adults, but you play just shorter bits, of course. But they can take anything. If you talk about it a little bit, explain, and they're wonderful audiences, they can be children. And I really love that. And it's funny enough, in Paris, we had two concerts with the orchestra, the Radio France. So what I was doing was a Haydn concerto. That was it. But one concert was on a Saturday for sort of children who obviously, a lot of them play music and their parents brought them. But the other concert was just a school's concert. And it's actually the school's concert I enjoyed even more because, I don't know, that somehow they were even more fresh and open. And I love the question. Always my favourite bit of a children's concert is the question and answer session. And I imagine they come up
with some fascinating
questions. Very funny. Very funny and sometimes very touching. Like
yes.
When I did a whole concert devoted to Schumann in Japan for children. And I remember this little girl asking, when you play this beautiful music, what emotions do you feel inside? They're absolutely spot on.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, you've written two books for children with great titles. Certainly, if I was a child, I'd be very attracted to these. Why Beethoven Threw the Stew and Why Handel Waggled His Wig.
Yes, and also with Anne Dudley. She wrote the music, I wrote the text. We've done three musical stories, which also have quite good titles, I think. Little Red Violin, Goldie Pegs and the Three Cellos, and Cinderella.
Cinderella, I like that. And these, again, presumably to bring children into the world of classical music and expand their minds, really, and to learn more.
Yeah, I'm not really thinking. I mean, of course, it's wonderful to expand them, but just introduce them. Well, the books are to introduce them to the 12 great composers I write about and just make them feel they're friends. My teacher, Jane Cowan, always made me feel the great composers were alive and my special friends.
Yes.
I still feel that. They are sort of living beings for me.
Stephen, thank you very much indeed for coming into the Culture Club. It's
really
good to see
you. It's been a pleasure. And you didn't get the giggles this time.
No, I didn't.
I'm very impressed.
Not this time. Well, we're now going to hear from one of your fellow performers at the Wigmore Hall concerts this coming Wednesday and Saturday. This is Joshua Bell.
My younger brother.
On Classic FM. Thanks again for downloading this podcast. I hope you'll join me in the Culture Club this Sunday from 3, when I'll be speaking to the renowned mezzo-soprano Dame Janet Baker.